Mr. Acting DG and Mr. Diale, Mr. Diale. Ήταν έτσι αρωτά μου πουλάει. Ήταν έτσι αρωτά μου κλείνει τα φωκιά σου. Σπένει. Well, you're welcome. It's a pity that honorable members, this meeting is clashing with the meeting of the portfolio committee. That side would have loved to have had a joint meeting. And I understand that PM, the minister, is there as well. Eh? So you had to split. Acting DG, you couldn't split yourself. He's now back to. Okay, so this Miss DG and the minister are there. Okay, the DPG are here. Well, thank you very much for coming. I would have loved to have the whole team. GM, the other committee, we invited you today. We're very pleased, in fact, that you're here so that we can have one understanding. Because I must confess that up to now, I don't think that we have been having a common understanding of what is it that we want to achieve. The department, as far as we are concerned, is doing wonderful work in terms of the delivery of the school. However, we can all what we call recognize that there are challenges in terms of the of monitoring of those projects, and that is where we're saying that there's a misunderstanding amongst ourselves in terms of what is it that needs to be done. We had a meeting with the department. Unfortunately, you were not part of that meeting. When was this in August? The one we held at October. Wow. Okay. We held that meeting in October. I know that after that meeting, the department sent us some information. I'd really like us, GM, to spend most of our time, our energies, focus our energies there on how do we monitor this expenditure. You would recall that in the you had asked for a 1.3 billion rand rollover, of which it could not be granted because of low spending, and in fact that time after 6 months, the department on this program was at 18%. So I think further thought that if they had granted it, it would have created a bigger, what we call it, understanding. So, honourable members, I think that really the issue is how do we ensure that then there is a proper monitoring, or that there's a strategy. Maybe there is monitoring, and I guess there's monitoring, but I think that there is a strategy. In that meeting, DM, what we said to the department is give us the number of schools that have been granted since maybe the inception of this program in 2012, who among the service providers is responsible for what, on what date was those schools given to those service providers, and what is the plan for these service providers to complete the work? Now, we did get a report, but the report does not contain what I'm saying, because we wanted a plan for each one of them from the day they received the mandate to carry on with those schools. In other words, what we had asked, we would have loved to have, is that the DBSA has been given these schools on this date, and this is their plan of delivering these schools, so that when you monitor, you know what you are monitoring. Now, for now, we're not convinced. We think that we give the schools, but we would like to see that plan, so that if we are monitoring, we think after 3 months, after 6 months, you are supposed to be at this level, you are not there. Why are you not here? What are the challenges? Yeah, so that is really what we ask for all the service providers. Now, I don't know, honorable members, but I think that is the key of what we would like to do together, so that this monitoring, all of us, we are aware, and the report is supposed to be disaggregated into which are the schools for DPSA, for public works, Eastern Cape, for whatever, so that we know who is a deliverer, who is having challenges in delivering, what are those challenges. And but for now, it's not clear to us as a committee. But something, by the way, really by the way, it's I'm just worried about your communication. In that I read a lot of reports, department is not building schools. A very blanket statement. It's not building schools and blah blah blah. People, they go to Caterpillar or whatever you call it, programs about the department. But it does those programs. To me, they don't seem to be objective in that these are the challenges. This is what is being done about those challenges, for instance. I think it's not really on our call as appropriation. But for me, as an ANC member, to sit in this committee knowing what is happening, I get worried when I don't hear the department respond, you know, on those things. I know that if you, the media might not necessarily be on your side. This week at least there was a positive reporting this week. They followed one child who was from the Rondavel until to this beautiful school. It was one positive report that I saw. I'm sure many of us noticed that report. Okay, with those few remarks, EM, we have already welcomed you. We therefore invite you to address this.
Thank you very much, Chairperson, and honorable members. It's good to be with you again. You may recollect that the last we spoke or interacted with each other was sometime towards the end of July last year, at which time, Chair, we were reflecting on the 49 schools, that the part two has been completed. And I remember at the time giving you an undertaking that by the end of the financial year, if these schools are not completed, I would personally be held to account. So perhaps it's important that I mention that. And I also mention, other than for the vacation period, schools per week would average be delivered in the Eastern Cape. The question now is, as we're sitting together, have I fulfilled my delivery promise? And I think we have a very good story to say. Beyond, we've basically delivered on those 49 schools, and we will certainly, we are delivering beyond that. I think perhaps it's important that we start at this way you concluded, Chair, and thank you for drawing our attention to this. We don't have a very friendly media. We rarely hear about the huge impact of schools that are fully equipped, fully furnished with ICT, state-of-the-art schools that are provided to communities that live in abject poverty, and the enormous difference it makes to them. It's rather unfortunate because I personally have delivered not less than 5 schools in the Libode district, and you would not find a single person from the media out there to just touch, feel, and see or interact with people. On the contrary, what you would get is basically an article in a newspaper saying that the Deputy Minister of Basic Education is finished, that indeed those schools that he promised are not being delivered. And then they basically do some kind of analysis of delivery, what is delivered. And I thought it's important in the context of what has been raised in the media, what I had shared with the committee itself, to reflect on it. Ms. Giale will do precisely what you wanted her to do. She would, in her presentation, be reflecting on the process. In other words, what are the different phases of implementation? What are the activities involved in that particular phase? What is the estimated time for completion? So in other words, how long does it take to design? How long does it take to tender, to procure tenders? And that would give you an estimation. To what extent or how long would it take to complete a school? I'm sure the committee has visited the Eastern Cape. And in the Eastern Cape, you have an extraordinary phenomenon, a phenomenon not of hard to teach schools, but hard to reach schools. The hills and the valleys, the most astounding, beautiful, pristine beauty of the Eastern Cape, is often marred by the difficulties that you have in having access to those schools. And one, when one reflects on the challenges that contractors face in an environment such as that, and having been there personally, one can understand what contributed to the delays in terms of getting work done much quicker. But that is not that shouldn't be used as an excuse, because contracts are contracts and they should indeed be performed. Chair, let me start with the 49 schools. 44 of the schools have been delivered. In other words, they are complete. The five, the remaining five, four of them have beneficial occupation. In other words, the learners are in the school, learning and teaching is taking place where it's practical completion. From the 44, have been completed. In other words, you basically, your retention period has gone, the contract is concluded, the retention monies have been paid over, nothing is outstanding. So there's complete fulfillment of the contractual obligations as between the department and the contractor. With regard to the other schools, the five remaining schools, four of them have practical completion. In other words, the schools are safe for occupation, beneficial occupation. Learners are in the school. What we don't do, and you know, this is quite amazing, because there's a huge expectation in the media that if you're basically delivering the school, you must have the pomp and ceremony and the divide all in sundry and say, come, cut the ribbon, and then we can say that the school is open. Can you believe it? We're saying that our children are so desperate for education. The moment the environment is safe and they can have beneficial occupation, we put them in the school. If the ceremony takes 6 months thereafter, it's irrelevant. What is relevant is that we have an environment that is conducive to learning, and indeed that's important for us to do. So the remaining four, from the 44, the four of them, there is beneficial occupation. There is one that is not, that is complete in terms of a school, which could be occupied, but the external works in terms of the retaining walls have not been completed, and because of the safety of the learners, we thought it would be in the best interest for that to be completed before we give beneficial occupation. So technically, your 49 schools are complete, but practically and formally, we would say one of those schools story is that the promise that I've made to the portfolio committee, to the standing committee, indeed has been, the appropriations committee has indeed been carried out. But I think the narrative doesn't end there, because I don't think we met about just these 49 schools. It was a bigger picture. What is happening? And that is the question. See, what is happening? Are there any other activities? Yes, there are. There are 70 schools that are in the process of construction. In the Eastern Cape alone, there's about 51 additional schools that are being built as we speak, in various stages of construction and completion. So if you look at it in terms of actual construction that is taking place, there are 14 schools in the Western Cape alone that are under construction. There's some 50 schools in the Eastern Cape, the schools in the Free State, the schools in Mpumalanga that are being built. So approximately 70 to 71 schools are in the stage of construction. I don't want to steal the thunder of Ms. Diale. She will basically provide you with the details of where we are. And the story goes beyond these 70 schools. In other words, in addition to the 49 schools and the 71 schools, what is happening and what is going to happen and when it's going to happen and who is going to take responsibility for that and where are the challenges. There's an interesting phenomenon also. Whether you are in the Eastern Cape or in the Western Cape, in the Free State or anywhere else, you have those contractors that perform timelessly and with integrity, and you always have those defaulting contractors. So in the Western Cape, for example, in the 14 schools, there are two contractors. The responsibility has been undertaken by the Department of Education, and it's no fault of the Department of Education, but the contractors have not performed and they've got to determine those contracts. So it's not a phenomenon that's peculiar to the Eastern Cape or to the Free State. So you would have the phenomenon of those that perform and those that do not perform. What we can share with you, Chair, is that our experience in the Eastern Cape, especially with the 49 schools, made us very much wiser in terms of how to manage contracts, in terms of what to ensure is inserted in the contracts, in terms of monitoring and evaluation, and in terms of selecting credible contractors to do this particular work. What is extraordinary also, Chair, and this is a further good story, is that when you look at your delivery, it's not only a delivery of a school. It has a media center, it has ICT connectivity, it has a laboratory, even if it's a primary school. It has grade R facilities, which are very different. It has sanitation for grade R learners and separate sanitation for other primary school learners. It has playing amenities, sporting amenities. So you have a complete structure. And I mean, that is really, really, really something that has a huge, huge impact on the community, where learners would say, well, you know, I certainly am looking forward to going to school because the environment is conducive to learning, where educators would say, well, it's a pleasure going to school. I think one of the discussions that shouldn't occur here, but should occur at another level, is basically, what do we do to retain our educators in these remote areas where the infrastructure is excellent, where the facilities are excellent, but the places are so far from the urban centers? And it's so hard to reach. And that's a real question that we have to face. So, Chair, what we've basically done and what Ms. Diale would be doing, and obviously with the support of Mr. Padiyashi, is providing you with the process to say what are the different phases from planning to implementation. What are the five phases that one looks at? Then she would basically give you an outline of all the projects. But it would be not in a very generic sense, but would be specifically to say, this is what KUHA is doing, this is what IDC is doing, this is what Public Works is doing, this is what is happening in the Eastern Cape, this is what's happening in the Western Cape, and each province. Then she would also be providing with some information with regard to three critical areas: electricity, water, and sanitation. So we would basically be able to provide you with a report on that. And having done that, I think we certainly would invite any questions that any you yourself shares, as well as any of your team and honorable members might have. So what I am saying, that I could say I'm reasonably upbeat in terms of where we were last year. I was extremely distressed and disappointed, and I certainly didn't hold back to say that this is my disappointment, and certainly we cannot allow it to persist. I do think we have turned the corner. I do believe that we can celebrate delivery in a very significant way, and I think before I conclude, to really express my gratitude to the DDG and his entire team, and Ms. Diala has been quite central in terms of what we've achieved. But she's also ably assisted by some professionals who have strengthened the capacity of the department to oversee precisely what you are saying. You know, it's so important to have that human resource capacity. There was a stage in the Eastern Cape, and if I could share this with you as I conclude, where the Eastern Cape would tell you that they have 1,065 projects. They would not be able to tell you at what stage the projects are. They would not be able to tell you who the contractors are. They would not tell you when the estate estimation. Today, if you go down to the Eastern Cape, you will find an architect, a quantity surveyor, a project manager, an entire professional team dealing with the infrastructure. This is not the Afidi program. I'm talking about the provincial program over there. They would be able to give you a photographic display of each one of the particular projects and be able to identify the challenges in each one of these projects. And the reason is because I've been asking precisely the same questions that you've been asking, Chair. What you asked our department after asking the Eastern Cape in terms of our intervention process, how is it possible that you have billions of money available to you for infrastructure, but you don't have a competent professional team that can oversee and drive this particular process? I'm quite happy to say that the landscape of the infrastructure work within the Eastern Cape would also be changing progressively, so I think that's another good story that would have emerged as a result of the intervention. But thank you for your kind invitation and for the opportunity to address you. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Chair and Honourable Members. I'll take you through the presentation. And what is in the presentation, I will start with what we have as our target. I will take you through what we have as our allocation on the program in terms of the budget. I will also, what the GM has alluded to, the different stages. The committee has been asking when I say the projects are maybe at a planning stage. You have been insisting to say what are the activities that are involved there, you know, how long will it take you to get there. And so I have tried to allude to the different stages that we have on the program, the deliverables that you can expect, and the estimated time frames that you can look at, and of course taking into consideration that you will get some deviations here and there. Then I will go into the actual progress, where we have the implementing agents, how many schools each implementing agent has, and what is the progress in terms of what they are doing. And I will just give a brief summary of where we are at in terms of our expenditure. Okay, that is what we have on Afidi. You remember that we have four sub-programs, although many times we are focusing on the second column there, which is inappropriate schools, and we have also broken down those schools in terms of how many we have in each province. We have water projects that we are also doing, sanitation as well as electrification. And those are the bottom figures. Inappropriate, currently we are sitting at 522, water 1120, sanitation 741, and the electrification 528.
Inappropriate includes the mud schools. So it's mud schools and unsafe schools. So those are the two categories of inappropriate. So that you could have. That is why the Eastern Cape, which has the largest number of mud schools, in fact, the only province that has mud schools, has such a huge number. That is 153. Thank you.
Thank you, GM. And in terms of our budget allocations, the current financial year we have 2.4 billion, and then in the next two financial years we have 2.9 as well as 2.6 billion. And you will see as well the estimated budget per province, and that you will see that the big share of that is going to the Eastern Cape, and you will see that it is related directly to the backlogs that we have in that province. And here is what I have alluded to earlier, to say what stages we have in our implementation. you will see in the beginning there we start with your planning, and this is where now we start with the implementation, with the appointment of our implementing agents. And the implementing agents, they prepare what we call an infrastructure program implementation plan, and this is what the chair has been asking to say. Do these implementing agents have a plan that you are monitoring to see what they are doing? And each of them do provide us with the implementation plan, and that is what we insist on before they start with any of the work. Unfortunately, it's a bulky document that we don't always present here, but we can give, we have insisted, and we can give you the milestones that you should also be looking at when we are, when they are not delivering. And more or less, we are looking at about 6 weeks to prepare that. And then we go to your stage two. Now that is where now we have the implementing agents, and the implementing agents now, they appoint professional service providers. Your professional service providers, we are looking at engineers, as quantity surveyors, we are looking at architects and other built environment professionals. And what we do under that particular stage, we start preparing the procurement document, the request for tenders, the evaluation and award, and we do appoint the PSPs. So that is the process of procuring those particular PSPs. So it takes a bit of a process as well, and we're estimating at about 8 weeks. We have then stage three. That is where now, once we have appointed those guys, they can start with their design work. I won't elaborate further there. Then we more or less estimate that they take 8 weeks there. And on stage four, we have now procurement of contractors. Once the designs have been finalized, the professional service providers, they start with their procurement documents. They go out on tender, it closes, they evaluate, and then we can award and appoint a contractor. Then further on, we have three more stages that we look at, and now that is where the implementation starts, the actual construction, where you can just now start seeing the ground being hit, you can see the dust arising everywhere. And we are estimating 12 to 16 months. However, we acknowledge that there are cases where, and there has been cases on the 49th route that we have gone over that. But that is a good estimated time to say this is what you can give contractors, and they should be able to give you the school within that period. Then we have a handover, and that is where it really doesn't take much. Once the 12 to 16 months have come to an end, the handover just takes around 2 weeks, and then we get close out. Now that is the retention period, whereby after 3 months you can now release your retentions and you let go of the contractors. Now the defects and liabilities, the latent defects period starts. Having said that, we go on now to give you an account of what we are doing on ACD. You will see in the Eastern Cape, we have appointed GBSA. We have given them 99 schools. What we will do in the following slides, we will tell you exactly how far they are in terms of those 99 schools. We have appointed IDT, we have SCUHA, we have Department of Public Works, and we have also in addition appointed National Department of Public Works, and there is also JED that is doing those six schools. So we have around 260 schools in Eastern Cape alone that are at different stages that I have just shown you in the previous slides there. But as we go on, you will see exactly at what particular stage each one of them are at. And then we have in the Free State, where we have 30 schools there, you will see we have split those schools amongst the CDSA doing 11 of those schools. IDT in the Free State is doing 10, and we have Free State Department of Education doing the 9 schools. In the KZN, we have 3 schools, and they are being done by Adopter School. In Limpopo, we have 3 schools that are being done by DBSA, Mpumalanga, DBSA 5 schools, Northern Cape in Northwest, 1 and 2 each, they are being done by DBSA, and lastly, we have Western Cape, who is doing 25 schools. Now, with the target that I showed you in the beginning of 522, we have 193 schools that we still have to allocate to implementing agents. And these schools, I must emphasize that those particular schools are affected by the rationalization and major issues, so some of the schools might get closed, some will merge with others, so that is what the Department of Education in the province is currently dealing with. In summary, we have, when I add up all those schools that I have just shown in the previous slide, we have 329 schools that are at various stages of implementation, and included in that 329, we have the 49 schools, notorious 49 schools that we started with DBSA, and to date we have committed over 7.7 billion. I know our expenditure is not desirable, but obviously if people are not performing, we can't be paying without them having done their work. But that is what we have committed to date. And approximately 190 of those schools, that's the 193 that I have said they are affected by rationalization and measures processes. And let me give you an account of where each of the implementing
could it change just you just with regard to the realignment, mergers and closures. If you go down to the Eastern Cape, KwaZulu-Natal, even parts of the Western Cape, you would find this phenomenon where you have a school with learners, approximately 40 learners, some 60 learners, and you might have a hut structure. And just some 3 kilometers away, there's another hut structure with 22 learners. It just doesn't make sense to have two new schools built out there. You'd rather have them merge or realign and build a good school that would provide for that. Now, that process there, as you would know, for the challenges that the Western Cape has faced in relation to consultation, it's a very delicate and sensitive one, because you've got to speak to the communities, you've got to speak to the educators, you've got to speak to the union representatives, you've got to speak to the community members, the SGBs, so that there is a complete buy-in, so that when a merger takes place, it doesn't become contentious. So mergers are taking place on a large scale, especially in provinces, the remote provinces, the rural provinces of Eastern Cape, KwaZulu-Natal, and parts of the Western Cape. We believe as long as it's a rational basis to do so, as long as adequate provision is made for transportation where learners have to be moved from one community to the other, then we must proceed with the rationalization, because it doesn't make sense to have a school that's not a viable entity. Now, we allowed the provinces to go through the process again, because you don't want to have a white elephant, you know. 10 classrooms, 2 of which are occupied, 8 are gone to waste. And these are the ones where they said, look, give us a little bit of time, we are busy with the process, and once we finalize the process, then you can proceed in this way. So it's a conscious delay on our part to allow for this process to take place in the different provinces. I've just mentioned a few provinces, but even in the Northwest, and the Free State mergers are taking place on an ongoing basis. Thank you very much.
Sorry, Chair, can I just have some clarification on something before the lady goes into the details of all the various schools. Can she just tell me, because I just want my figures correctly, how many schools originally were on the ACD program, because that is what we are looking at, and she tells us now that there's only 190 schools remaining on the ACD. How many were there originally? I don't know. And how many of them have been completed? You know, that's a simple arithmetic thing.
It was 522 originally, but because it's now an open list, because of this factor here, the mergers and the realignment of schools over here. So precisely. Thank you.
Chairperson, yeah, thank you, Deputy Minister. Thank you for the presentation thus far. I don't know if it's going to be necessary for the detailed presentation in terms of which school, when they're going to be ready and things like that. They're all here, we can see them. Maybe we should ask the presenter if there's anything that she wants to highlight from the rest of the presentation, then they can, then we can have a broad discussion the principles rather than the details.
That assists us, because remember what we said in that meeting of October and today's meeting, we're saying to them the challenge that we had, I think we mentioned that before you came in, is around monitoring, so that there can be some kind of acceleration of expenditure if there's proper monitoring. Now, I'm just afraid to say, don't say this, and next time if it catches up with all of us, maybe we should allow them to, I think they're kind of being enough. With your permission, honorable members. Okay, please proceed.
Okay, on the DVSA, we have given them two batches of schools. This is the 49 that the DM has already alluded to. I won't go into those details, but the one that the minister was talking about is that bottom one, Somba. And what you will also notice is that these schools, we have had to have replacement contractors in all five of them. And that is one of the factors that led to them being late. And you have Sompa there, that is the school that we're saying the learners have not been given beneficial occupation because of the safety around the school. And you can see that those schools are well over 90, except for Mandobe, which had the replacement contractor done later. Okay, and on the batch 2 of schools, the 50 schools that the DM talked about, that is the plan, Chairperson, that we have talked about to say when were these people appointed and what have they done and on what date. And here they are at stage 3. They are currently busy with the procurement of contractors, and we are just waiting for their procurement report so that we can finalize the appointment of contractors. So that is where they are at with the 50 schools. I'll go on to IDT.
To get started, the 50 school, you're not talking about the 49 schools now. Okay.
Okay. I'll try to make that clarity when I jump on to different questions. So I have dealt with the 49. I'm going to the other 50 that we have given to them, and currently they are busy with the adjudication of contractors. And we are intending to go out and start with construction in the month of March. Then we have IDT. I'm still in the Eastern Cape. IDT, we have given them a 12 school, and you will see the last column there. They are progressing quite well. The first school has already reached practical completion. We have taken that. The learners are occupying that particular school. The one at the bottom there, the reason why it does not have any date is because the appointment was done recently. And one of those schools that you are seeing there, we have had to get a... we are getting a replacement contractor, and we have terminated one of the contracts. Besides the 12 that we have given them additional 36 schools. And that, what you have in front of you, is the program that they have given us. I have just highlighted different stages that they have completed with. They are running behind schedule on that particular one, but where they are at currently is on procurement of contractors as well. And we believe that they will be starting with construction in the new financial year as well. Yeah, and maybe what I must highlight here is that the TICC has requested the different departments to give an undertaking to do schools with alternative construction technology. You will remember that in the beginning we had a problem with shortage of materials, and therefore we are exploring into different alternative for construction technologies so that we are not held to ransom by some of the suppliers of this material. So that is at a stage 4 currently. Then I go on to CDC. CDC, we have given them the first batch of schools, which is 25 schools. I will not go into details into that. The second last column there, that is the progress effort at the end of January, and you can see that they are progressing quite low. Where you are not seeing any dates given there is because the procurement was finalized late December or is still being finalized. But all of this are at the stage where we are procuring contractors. That is the other, that's still the 25 schools, I won't go into that, but also what I must mention here on CDC is that we are experiencing some of the contractors that are not performing well, and we've had to do a termination of some of the contractors. And then we have a Department of Roads and Public Works in the Eastern Cape, and they are doing 16 schools there, and you will see that they are in construction with 13 of the schools, and we have 3 of the schools there that they are still at a stage where some they are appointing PSPs, professional service providers, and at some stages they are appointing contractors. Then we have Public Works, the national office. Their appointment was very recent. It was late last year, and you will see that that is the plan that we have from them, Chairperson, and that is what we will be monitoring them based on. You will see they have given us different stages, and they are saying that we can expect them to start with the actual construction around March as well. And again, I must mention that this is where we are going to use the alternative construction technology as far as possible. And then the last one in the Eastern Cape, DDG. Yes, DDG.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. I think at the last time we were in a committee, we spoke about dealing with the remaining schools via mobile structures. Work had been done and a tender had been put out, but then it was withdrawn because communities had indicated that they would rather have a brick and mortar structure, and that some were even prepared to wait. So basically that 193, we've taken 6 of those schools and we have we've done work on that to put out on tender. So I think the remaining schools, as we work with the Eastern Cape Education Department in terms of the merger, we will actually then issue out to implementing agents to continue to deal with that. Just to indicate that even if there's a merger, they are on a list of 190, they do not come off the SED list. And if the merger takes too long, then as a DBE, we need to sit down and think about whether we need to still go ahead and vote, because a merger cannot take 2 to 3 years and children still be in a hut. So there will be something in the next few months that we'll have to consider on the remaining schools as well.
So Ms. Diale was presenting on the 190 schools as we're talking now.
Okay, I was presenting on those 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 in the Eastern Cape. I was still in the Eastern Cape, so I was presenting about those schools that we have issued to different implementing agents.
You were presenting on the
DBSA, IDT.
We were on the Eastern Cape one whilst
right.
We were presenting it.
That's right.
And it was it on 190 schools.
It's only 260.
Yeah.
All of them is
260.
That's right.
And then JET
yeah,
is
yes.
Part of the 260.
That's right.
Mm-hmm. I think I'll get that because I keep on saying, is it 190? Is it 260? Is it 190? That's what I've been
okay.
Asking myself.
So 190. See at the bottom the unallocated 193, and that has not been appointed. We don't have an implementing agency in those schools. That's right. Yeah.
Would have been 199 without the 6 if we had not given it to checks.
now, I think I'm comfortable.
Thank you, Judge. Just a general question. These plans and schedules were provided by the service providers. To what extent does the department have faith in the kind of plan that they've given you? Are you...
Another thing. The question that I was allowing, that's where people don't what you call follow what is being said. You're right to say, let's just pack the general question for the it's more for discussion than just clarifying what is practically happening here. Thank you.
Okay, I have finished with the implementing agents that we have in the Eastern Cape. I am now going to the Free State where we are doing 30 schools. We have, out of the 30 schools, we have given DVSA 11 of those schools, and they are currently at stage 3. They have finished their designs, and they are currently in the process of procurement of contractors. And that is the plan that they have given us to say we would like to start with a construction in, I have there for your Bethlehems and other schools, we have there they are looking at, but actually I must say we must say that's incorrect in terms of the contractual start date. The contractual start date that are there, I must clarify, that is when they appointed the professional service provider. So you will see the contractual start date in others, that is when the contract started with the contractor. So they are planning to start with implementation of this in March as well. We have received their procurement report to say these are the contractors that we are recommending for appointment. Repeat. Yes, that's when the PSP started. Yeah. Okay. Construction around March. Yeah, we currently have their report whereby they are recommending contractors, and we will give them feedback within this week.
For clarity on further clarity, contractual start date is an appointment date of a contractor. Can they answer? Sure. I'm asking, is it that contractual start date? Can you tell me about it? What is it? Is it an actual date of appointment of a contractor, or what is it?
Okay, in this slide that I'm talking about, that is when the contract, the professional service providers were appointed. In the previous slide, that is when the contract, the contractor was appointed.
So they are different. This word is used differently in the previous pages.
Yes, in the previous pages we were...
For instance, let's make an example. Let's talk about page... What page are we... let's say page 11. Let's go to page 11. Just for me to understand if I really do understand what you're saying. I don't want to ask this question again. Contractual start date, Dali Bongo, JSS 2202-2013. Is it the same as what you asked? Or is it
okay, on IDT, that is when the contractor was appointed by IDT. So that is different from what I'm talking about in the PC.
Okay,
the correct.
So what? You find this contractual start date almost in everything. And I don't want to have my own understanding of what it means. So that's what I want to understand, because in all these you will have that date, you will have the date, you will have the year, you will have the date, you will have the year, you will have the year, and you go further. So if I'm the only person here who do not understand this thing, I know I was late, I think you can help.
So just before the other explained, if he could decode this contractual start date, in a response he says, service provider appointed. Now I'm sitting here, I don't know what he's talking. He's talking service provider in the sense of people who are starting to plan, or he's talking service provider in terms of construction that has to happen in terms of the work. So I think the term, so that we don't miss each other, I find the term fairly quoted, because you speak to the term, it's a service provider being appointed. What is a service provider we're talking about in terms of this class? Is it people that are going to plan, or is it construction?
Okay, let me go back to the slide where I'm showing different stages. You have the appoint. Let me go to stage two where you appoint a professional service provider. And I had said that is referring to your engineers, your quantity surveyors, and those professional service providers. And the contractual start date, you'll see that we go into procurement of those guys and we enter into a contract with them. So there will be a contractual start date with the appointed PSCs. You further go on to stage four, where now you procure the contractors. And once you have done that, you have a contractual start date with your contractors. So wherever you enter into a contract, you can have a contractual start date. And every time I talk to a slide, I clarify that is the contractual start date of either the professional service provider or of the contractor. In the Eastern Cape, the consistency has been that the contractual start date that I have given you is for stage four, where the contractor is being appointed. Now I go on to the Free State, and there I have given you the contractual start date when the professional service providers were being appointed. In the Free State, GBSA has finalized stage two, so they have appointed a professional service provider, and the date that I'm giving you is July. That's when the contract were entered into with professional service providers. But they are currently now finalizing stage four, and we will now have the date when the contractor has been appointed, and we will have a contractual start date for the contractor.
There will be more clarity if you start where Honorable Ramadan is saying. You were speaking about service providers. Just do that so that the members can be clearer with members. Maybe come before you. She responds. I don't know if your question is covered.
I think for me, it's basically a situation where the report format hasn't been standardized. But if you do look at that that cycle, and you look at the start dates and the Free State, those cycles are out of sync already, by far, way behind. So either we must be realistic when you speak to these sites, just be realistic, just to say that okay, those were behind because of this particular reason, and it will have an impact. and failed it again. Then what, so that's what we're saying. I said, put a realistic program in place and cost that program so that we can see what those overruns are going to be to the MCS. Thanks.
Now, from, you know, what maybe we're allowing now is just clarity for now. And I think, again, the question you're raising is important for discussion, you know. Because I wanted us to be on the same, what we call, level in terms of saying, clarify who is the service provider, and those kind of things, and the difference between those contractual dates. You know, you're raising about something, about the terminology, about the contractual date, which has been generalized. Sometimes it means the professional, some honorable members wanted to know when it means professional, when it means the contractor, the actual contractor.
Thank you very much, Chair. I think the honorable members are asking a very important question, and there must be consistency in terms of how we describe the precise location. From my understanding, and perhaps this would assist, you have a process where, for example, you're going to build, say, 100 schools. You then have a choice to say who's going to be the agent that is going to carry out the work on your behalf as a department. Are you going to use Public Works? Are you going to use DBSA? Are you going to use KUHA? So they are the agents. They are basically then assigned with, say, 50 of the schools, say DBSA. And now once DBSA has 50 schools, obviously they've got to basically put together a team that's going to be responsible for the design, the preparation of the plans, look at the site. And once all those designs have been completed, then they go out into tender. That's when a contractor is going to be appointed. And what Ms. Diale is saying, that in the pre-sale, the agents have been appointed. The plans, the designs have been completed. We are now at the stage where we can invite tenders from contractors to carry out the construction, which is going to be overseen by the agent that would be, well, in terms of my example, DBSA, but whatever the case might be. I think it was important for Ms. Diale to be more specific in terms of conveying to the committee precisely what is meant at a by a particular stage. But that is the understanding that I have, and I hope it does assist in terms of clarifying what is the concern that has been raised.
I think the question that Honorable Masarana is asking to further clarify is, you're using now the word implementing agent. Earlier, Ms. Yale was using service providers. Do we say that implementing agents, service providers, is one and the same thing? So that that's for the sake of, I think that is a club that honored members want to hear. Yeah.
When I talk about implementing agents, I'll refer them to implementing agents. I will not say service providers. When I talk about your engineers, your quantity surveyors, I will talk about professional service providers. When I talk about contractors, I will talk about, I'll say contractors and not service providers. Continue, because if you ask that question, it means we must go back to the first pages and ask what were you referring on this one? Were you referring to an agent? Were you referring to service provider? We'll go back, but you see, so I think let's proceed. Okay, in future contractual start dates, I will refer to when the contractor has been appointed so that there is that consistency. Then there will be clarity. So in the Free State, we have DBSA, who is currently at stage 4. They are finalizing the appointment of contractors. And still in the Free State, we have IDT who has been appointed there, and they are in construction. So you would have a different implementing agents that were appointed at different times, and therefore you will see their progress is at different stages that I have alluded to earlier on. So on the 10 pools that have been done by Free State, you will see the second last column there, the percentages in terms of progress by contractors. And on that first school, again, what the DM alluded to earlier on is that we are experiencing some contractors who are not performing as they should be, and there is a termination that happened on the 5th of this month. Again, still in the Free State, the last 9 schools, they have been done by Free State Education Department, and you will see that they are at different stages, at a different stage compared to the 2 implementing agents that I have just talked about. They are at stage 2 where they are procuring the professional service providers, your engineers, your quantity surveyors, and your architects. Then we are now in KZN. KZN has 3 schools, and what I have given you is a typical program that they have on one of the 3 schools, and the 3 schools are running concurrently, and the dates are the same on all the schools, and they are currently at a, you will see the on design period, that is where they estimated they will do that over February. Up to March. I go on to Limpopo. Limpopo has 3 schools there, and you will see what I am giving you there. Again, I have put in bracket their contractual start date for professional service providers. DBSA, you will see across the board, they appointed their professional service providers in July. Again, in Limpopo, they have given us their procurement report for appointment of contractors, and they intend starting now in this coming month of March. Then I go to Mpumalanga. Again, there we have a DBSA. There they are at stage 5. They have already appointed the contractors, and the contractor started in some of the schools. They started in December, and some started in January. I go to Northwest and Northern Cape, where we have 2 schools in Northwest, and again they appointed professional service providers, your engineer, your QSS, your architect in July, and currently they are at a procurement of contractors. They have given us their report, and they intend starting with construction now in March. Same applies to Northern Cape, where we have 1 school there, Stenham. Then I come to the Western Cape. What I have there on the Western Cape, we have the site handover where the contractual start date. Those are the first 11 schools that we had given to Western Cape, and you will see progress on that construction cost certified. That is the expenditure that has been incurred, and that is also a reflection of more or less progress where it is at. And you will see many of those schools, they started last year around March, 1 in April, and Naisna started in December of 2012. That other slide, that is the batch 2 that we have given to Western Cape of 11 schools, and they are currently at stage 4, where they are busy with procurement of contractors. We are just waiting for their report there, and they had intended starting with construction by the end of this month. However, we have not received their report yet, but once we have received their report and we have given approval, then they can start with construction. So that is on the inappropriate schools, that is your match schools, your Planky Skole, and some unsafe structures. Then I go on to summarize what we have done in sanitation, and I think something that we have not been we have not really given a lot of attention to when even in the media and everybody talks about ACIDI. We are doing great work in terms of sanitation, even if I have to say that myself. We have so far finished 226 sanitation. We have provided schools, 226 schools with sanitation. And what is remaining now on sanitation is currently at stage 5, where we are busy with the procurement of, at stage 4, where we are busy with procurement of contractors. On water as well, we have provided water to 232 schools to date.
Maybe other members said. I thought you were, reading this, say, to date, 226 schools have been provided with sanitation. But what you say seems to be saying that what we'll see left here is now the actual appointment of contractors. I don't know if I understand what you're saying.
If I go back to our targets, you will see that in terms of water, we have 1120 sanitation, 721 electrification, 528. So what I'm saying is where we have finished, let me say sanitation, over 260, the remainder of that work is currently at the at the stage whereby we are appointing a contractor. Okay, and same applies to water. We have finished 232, but the balance of what is remaining, some are in construction and some are at the procurement of contractors. And then on electrification, same applies. We have 150 schools that have been electrified, and the remaining now on electricity is at, others are at procurement of contractors, others are at construction. And then finally, a summary on our expenditure. I have said in the beginning that we have an allocation of around 2.4 billion. So on the first paragraph there, I am indicating to you 1.9. And that 1.9 excludes Western Cape, because what we have done in Western Cape, we have converted a portion of their budget into Schedule 4 so that we can facilitate the process of giving them tranche payment, because they were citing a difficulty of having to carry the project pay and then claim later. So it is easier for us to give them tranches, they pay, and they do the reconciliation, and we give them the balance of the money. So out of the 1.9, excluding Western Cape, at the end of December, we had spent 907 million, and so the balance as at the 1st of January, that's a mistake, it's not the 31st of January, it's the 1st of January, we were left with 51% of our budget. And then if I include the Western Cape, it takes us back to 2.4 billion and the expenditure is 51% of 2.4 billion. Correct. In terms of expenditure. In terms of expenditure, you always want to spend what you have been allocated. However, that has not materialized, because you see that the contractors have not basically performed as we have expected. And that is where the bulk of the money is, during construction. Now that you are seeing many of the contractors are coming on board, you should see construction and the expenditure going higher.
Well, thank you very much, Chair. I think it's sort of given us a good overview in terms of progress that has been made. I think the expenditure is certainly going to increase, because if you look at the expenditure in the Western Cape, just to take the 14 schools that are under construction, most of them are 80%. If you take Free State also, there's good progress in the 10 schools that are there. So many of them are coming to the end of that. So from that allocation there, you would find a significant increase in the expenditure. So that expenditure would be at end of?
That is at end of December.
End of December. So it's January, February, March. So I do believe that those figures will change. I don't think we would have spent all the money, but I do think that it will change. And compared to where we were last year, I think there's significant progress.
Mention example of page 9. Your page 9. Your original planned practical completion. What stage is that? At what do you mean by that? Original planned final completion. What do you mean by that? Project status 93%, 93.1%. At what stage are you saying the project, everything is up, you are left with electrification, or you are left with this? When you talk these percentages, what is that you are talking about? So I don't know, Chairperson, whether you want to treat it as a question or as a clarity, but that's my I don't understand the stages. It's a big English for me, too tricky, so I need it to be unpacked so that I understand the practical completion and the final completion. Because when you say final completion, but your project status is 77.7 or is 80, and then you come to revised planned completion, you talk about end of March 2014. So that's clarity, that thing, just clarity of this.
Yeah, thank you very much. I think, and thank you very much for the question. I think it's a very important question. And the explanation would be, if you look at your column, let's look at slide 19 on page 10 that we've been referred to. We have, on page 9, so sorry, I would be looking at the wrong. May I speak to my team? Sorry, thank you very much for your indulgence. You know, if you look at the planned progress, that means that in terms of our assessment, this is where we ought to have been at that point in time. So we would say by the end of January, we should have been at roof height. Right, and roof height would be, say, 70% of your project, your entire project. I'm just giving you an example. What is actually happening is they are not at 70%, they are at 50%. So they might be 20% behind the planned projection. So that is the distinction between your planned progress and your percentage progress to date. So that would be the... Your plan is our projection. Our professional team says by the end of January, by the end of... In terms of the contract, by the end of January, they should have been at roof height. However, they are at window height. Now, with regard to the percentages, a building site basically comprises, you know, first you've got your site clearance, then you've got your foundations, your excavation, your foundations, then your actual foundations, and then your brickwork, and then your windows, your doors, your roof, and so forth. So each one of these are quantified in terms of percentages. So you would say that up to your foundation, putting your foundation slab would make up, and I'm just giving you a hypothetical figure of 12%. And that would be 12% would be the completion of clearance, your excavation, your compaction, and your laying of the foundation. Assuming you say up to window height would be 28%, then that would be the 28. So your percentages signify a completion rate of in relation to the entire project itself. And that is the value of the percentages. So when you look at a percentage, if you look at slide 19, for example, we say Boshoff School should have been at 54%, is currently only at 16%, currently as would have been as at the end of December. It means that we've got to look at that very carefully to find out why are they behind, what is it that they're doing, so there could be an engagement between the department, the service providers, and the contractor in particular. So you would find, because of the poor, if you look at the last column, the notes there, it says this contractor did not perform well, and therefore they were obliged to terminate the contract. If you look at the next one, there is an explanation there to say the reason why this contractor is behind is because of the inclement weather that was experienced. So there are remarks at the appropriate places, but where the contractors are more or less on par with, you know, the projections, then you would not find any particular comment. But this is really to give the honourable members a sense of what the progress is in respect of each one. Obviously, we could break down each one of them into the finer details. So if you were to say, and if there's a request from the committee chair to say, look, with regard to Setlabeng Secondary School, can you tell us precisely where you are with regard to that? So we could provide you with the details as to what the progress has been. Have they completed the foundation? Have they done the brickwork? B, we could even provide you with a photograph of a visual picture of the site with its progress. So that would be available at the request of the committee in relation to any one of the schools. So that could be made available, because I think it's important that committees, as they do their work, may want more details about a particular school which they have an interest in.
DM, can you just help me with planned final completion? What is that? I hear what DM is saying, the explanation. Just tell me what is final completion, because I might have a different understanding when you say final completion.
Let me also
maybe, Mamza, I'll just go back to your slide 9. Because there's something that I think slide 9 must also assist us with. Slide 9, after the final completion, supposed to be those days. Now, where it was explained what happened. Now, the revised plan completion is end of March. But I'm sure you'll speak to it if you think that those days are still what you call revised.
Thank you for assistance, but UDM will assist me. Just planned final completion. In just what is that? Does it mean they have come to the end of the project? Everything is up and running, or so that I see. Yeah.
I think these are very legitimate, and don't think that we. Disappointed. We need to be grateful that these questions are being raised, because they clearly, in fact, if you look at the questions, the issues with regard to the 49 schools in the Western, in the Eastern Cape, for example, you had a similar situation. When you talk about practical completion, it means that the building site is complete. Your infrastructure, your classrooms have been built, the roof is there. There can be beneficial occupation. It means that the learners can go into the classrooms. So there might be a snag list, and in the snag list they might say that your fencing, perhaps, you know, you've got to extend it to another 2 meters over there. This portion of painting hasn't been done properly. So which means while the beneficial occupation takes place, there's no hazard whatsoever for the learners. They could complete those things. Or maybe the football ground, half of it has been served, the other half has to be completed. So that is the practical completion. The final completion is when all your complete, the job is complete, the necklace has been finalized, the retention monies, the monies that have been retained, and they are retained for usually, in terms of contracts, for 90 days, at times for 120 days, depending on the size of the contracts. Because everything has been dealt with, the approval of the engineers is there, and all the authorities, and we now pay over to the contractor the remaining amount. The contract is then terminated. We have no claim other than for latent defects. In other words, if there's a wall that collapses because of poor workmanship, we can have a claim. But visibly, from what the eyes can see, everything is complete. So that is final completion. So you always find your practical completion is usually between 90 and 120 days before your final completion. And I think it's a very important question, because that is the question that we had to make the decision. Do we wait for another 120 days or 90 days before our learners take occupation of the school, or do we give them the school immediately upon practical completion? And practical completion means that it is safe, there is no threat whatsoever for the learners to take occupation. And we are saying, given the need to have an environment conducive to learning, the moment there's practical completion, we are satisfied with the safety of our learners, let them have the school, we will do the formalities of final completion and thereafter cut the ribbons at the appropriate time. It doesn't have to, you know, it doesn't have to be a ceremony, so we're not too concerned about sequence as such. And therefore the question that is being asked is relevant, particularly in the context of what you've raised, Chair, with regard to communication. Because what has happened basically is the media is saying, you know, completion means, you know, you cut the ribbon. Everything is done. We're saying completion means you can beneficial occupation, you can go over there. Yes, the ribbons will be cut at the appropriate time, but it's not about making noise, it's about providing resources for our children. Thank you very much. If you look at slide 13, for example, if I could just take you to another slide, which speaks to exactly the same. The first one, Dumba Junior Secondary School, planned progress 95%, percentage progress 90%, which means that they are almost on par as to where they should be at a particular point in time. But your explanation is indeed the correct one. Thank you.
The product that you're delivering is a quality product that's excellent and well deserved. But where I'm a little bit concerned is that the original letter from Treasury giving this money for the ACD was for a period of 3 years. Now we are how far behind in terms of how is that money going to be taken for, or what processes is the department putting in place with Treasury to ensure that money is secured? Because if we do it continuously like we are doing it, this project will take, maybe to me, I may be being naive, maybe another 2 to 3 years easily. Which there's nothing wrong with doing because you're rolling out a product, but let us just understand where we are with that, because really you've had one rollover declined. That's going to have an effect. I think there was $1 billion short at the beginning as well, the cost of the project to what Treasury had given you. So somewhere along the line we're going to go along like this perfectly, and then it's just going to hit a brick wall kind of thing if we're not planning forward, and if we're not taken on board around what we're planning to do going forward. Thanks. Also, just maybe we can just, you see that these time frames in the cycle, yeah, these 8 weeks from stage three, but they're behind on those things. So either they must modify their slides to be able to give them an understanding of where they're going forward, or change something. But you can't say it's going to be 8 weeks and then practically you learn a lesson that is 12 weeks kind of thing.
Thank you, Chairperson. I think it could also have been easier if from the history we have and the questioning we always had with this department that they chose us, that you remember our target for 2011 was this, we achieved this. For this, 12 was this, we achieved this. For this was this, we achieved this. And then for this 190 schools, we are so far in other consultation in all those matters, and then we know whether, because it seems they are not included somewhere, we could be easily picking them up there. Oh, they fall here. Right now, they are now confusing us. That we never thought there was any school that was unallocated until now. We thought all the schools were allocated because they were presented to Treasury that this is the number of schools that need to be to fall under ACC. And I'm still looking at this other ACC aspect like water and sanitation and electricity, because these figures here, I don't understand how they're analyzed on those three pages, because they don't tell you the numbers that are on the front page. I don't know. Maybe I can't calculate. And then I wonder whether you have MOUs with the relevant departments, maybe they could assist somehow. I don't know how your approach is towards this other aspect of ACC. Thank you.
Well, thank you, Chair. Thank you for the presentation. You know, I think we've committed budget to the 193 schools where rationalization and mergers are likely to take place. And if the budget's committed, you know, the money is available somewhere and it's sitting there. And it's important that we sort that out as quickly as possible. Can you give us any idea as to the time frame for sorting out the rationalization and mergers so that we can get that spent? Because I am concerned on slide 30 that we've only spent 51% of our budget and we're not going to get close to spending everything because as Honourable Snell has correctly said, you know, we're way behind. The whole process is a very lengthy process. I think in many cases, like IDP, for instance, the one example on slide 19, you know, in all the cases, the contractors are behind schedule, and I think they should be pushed by the department. It's not acceptable because they are being paid as service providers, and we should make sure that they actually get that we get the service out of them that we are paying for. But then just on a lighter note, Chair, I don't think we need to push the department because the state person has said, don't worry about it, guys. Don't go for the schools. The ANC will, you know, rule forever, so you can take your time about this.
We have a
good
story. Well, thank you, Honorable Chair, and thanks to the presentation. And so CTP and Mrs. Viale. Can you hear me now? It's fine. No, Chair, you know, I just wanted to ask this earlier in the process on the slide 6, internal explanation of weeks and weeks and weeks, and the estimation of how long does it take to build or to construct a school. I just want to find out in terms of your own plan and the dates that you project for a school to be completed in the financial year. In your contract that you enter into, what is the requirement, the normal requirement for a construction completed, I'm talking meter square per day, for a contractor that is engaged in this particular classroom here? What do you enter into? What do you say to them? We enter into this contract, I'm expecting so many meters square per day. I'm talking now brick and mortar in terms of construction. There will be a different time in terms of your, maybe your foundation and the concrete. There will be a different time for a brick and mortar. What is it that you agree? What prompts this question? Is this 12 to 16 months that you project for the contractor to complete the school? And because this goes to the heart of the cost of the school, the completion. Because the longer you stay, the cost escalates. So I just want to find out that I don't know what I'm making myself clear in this question. All I'm asking, what is a meter square that you are expected from a contractor to deliver brick and mortar in the construction of the school for you to get to 12 months to build this particular school? I just want to understand that. not answer a question. Certainly a fair question. There's a jet here next to me that is an unfair question. And I shouldn't have looked at it. Now, can I carry on, Chair, with your protection? On that slide number 9, I think the slide 9 that was just talking to, I just want to get some assurance. This has been a moving target, this 49 schools. And it's been very difficult to actually touch. So I just want to find out in terms of the 5 remaining schools. In terms of, I see the date revised column, latest planned practical completion date. Is that for sure in terms of March? I see there's not a date, there's the end of March. And that's the way that they repeat. So are you sure this is going to be completed? Because I see the 77.7%. And I worry because I don't know what is that constitute, what does that constitute, that is 77%. Is it the roof? Is it the ceiling inside? I don't know. So I can't say. I just want to find out from whether you... Then on slide 10, just quickly galloping down, 50 schools. Now, if my memory doesn't desert me, when we had last year, there was a presentation, there was around about 70 schools that was the 49, which was a 50, one was built by the Eastern Cape. That's fine. But the following batch, we had around about 70. Now, I'm asking, there's a 20 somewhere missing. What happened to the 20? We don't have that presentation here now, but I mean, if I ask, we can get it. But I just want to ask, what happened to the 20? But the central question is this. This batch, DT, see the slides, presentation is quite long, and you forget what where it started. Which financial year are we referring to here? Of the slide number 10. Because remember the other one was 11, 12, which was 700 million when we started with 49, and then there was 50 the following fund. Which financial year are we referring to this particular fund? Because I want to determine whether is this already behind schedule in terms of financial year, because already we're 2030. Now, the way it's presented, I sort of lost as to which financial year is the reference made to this one. Then, quickly, Chair, excuse me for my lens question, and I also wanted to know on slide 12, are we talking financial year, which is the following one? Because I think there was a bottleneck from the 50 school to the 50, the 70, and then it started to be on top of each other. So help us to understand which financial year we're referring to. On the contractors that do not meet the requirements, it's kind of a general question, there's a slide that speaks to this. And you have to fire them, you have to employ others, and then others have to start sometimes halfway down the line, you find that they also, there's some problem, they have to go. What are the financial implications? What are the financial implications to the state, or in terms of the contractual arrangement that you enter into, that you don't incur additional costs? And what is the legal cost that is associated with? On the slide that you speak about 2 billion budget, I think it's slide number 30, I was wondering, just to find out, DP, whether in terms of the, because in this construction process, there's also this movie coming and going. Does the department have to pay legal costs in terms of, and where does that budget come from? Coming from the general budget or what is called professional fees in terms of your department, or does it come directly under this allocated budget to the subsidy? And if it is so, you find that you are going to run a short at the end of the process, and or cost overrun of the extension of time, given the time that you take in between to fire and reappointment of other contractors. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much,
Thank you, Chair. When I look at slide 5, I can see there are eight weeks. My question is, are these weeks happening simultaneously, or does each process take so many weeks? So it simply means if each process takes so many weeks, it means it's 7 months before anything can happen, if I'm adding them and dividing them by 4 weeks. Does it take so long to do these things? Then we need to relook how we do things, because it's a very long process. That's why maybe some of the things are really taking place. Now, the issue of unallocated schools, are they going to stay like that, or is there a plan to say which one are we going to look at? Because I can see that 196 states unallocated schools. So what does that really mean? Does it mean we don't know where are they, or we do know but there's no budget for that? What does that mean? And in terms of page 14, slide 14, on the notes it says notice have been issued. Notice of what? Not clear what is in issue. Is it a warning? Or is it a notice that the tender is passing? Or what? Also, when I look at slide 18, it's talking about appointed professionals. And then it's on stage 2. And when I look at the date, they were appointed in 2013. That is a very long time. And the plan completion date will be the December 2014. In between, what is happening? Why does it take so long? you know, I'm becoming concerned about the gap between things that need to happen. It's a very long gap. And then when you talk about that, is like number 28 and 29. 28 is talking about schools have been provided with water. Is it infrastructure, or are the water really coming out of the tap, including this one of electrification? Is it happening, the electricity is in the classes, or we are still planning for that? Because I can still see that they say underwater sanitation and electrification, 367 schools are at stage 3 and 4, which is a design stage and procurement of contractors. And then when I look at page 28, it says that has been done. So I am a little bit confused here to say actually what is happening. And then the partnership with municipalities, because there are dry areas in some of the areas, and municipalities are struggling, you know, to put out pipes and all those things. How sure are we that these things are happening? Because for me, it's like it's just a report, but there's no surety in some of the things. Even if the school is going to be completed, but the way things are going, they are not going on the same time. So I just want to understand why that it takes so long. Thank you.
Depending on the size of the school, it will overlap and whatnot.
So the presentation, I think, is supposed to clarify that, so that as Parliament, we don't have expectations that you will announce that we'll build so many schools, and therefore at the next, we think that there's going to be another announcement at the end of, beginning of another financial year, and that means that the other schools have been completed, you know. I think that it is really supposed to be a little bit open, so that we understand that these schools this year that we're building, we're hoping to finish them in June 2050, and that, so that if we say, for instance, you're behind, it's because we understand what is meant that by falling behind. I think the honourable members are saying that are worried about the time frames that is given to the professionals. It takes 8 weeks for them to put up their documents together, another 8 weeks to tender. I think that that's why then maybe we need to beef up our team. Just to tender. Taking another 8 weeks. 8 weeks for professionals to put their work together, and another 8 weeks for... I'm worried about this, this is the language, but for the tender to be done. I think that's why our employees say, this 8 weeks, how does it happen? Is it another 8 weeks and 8 weeks or what? But also, I think that we really need to tighten the monitor. If you look at the schools, some work or to the implementing agents was given in 2012. Now today, those schools have not been what you call a completed. The schools that we're talking about are the other what you call a 50 school. So maybe we really need to check up our oversight that Honorable I think that's your point that you're saying that now soon, next week there's going to be a tabling of another budget, and part of this, so that we really have to, if in the year the report that we got, National Treasurer said last year, no, during the MPDDS, they could not approve 1.3 billion because the expenditure was low. Mm-hmm. But maybe the issue, PM, is to say, since that what we call a report by National Treasurer last week, flagging that our expenditure is low, what is it that we're doing to, somebody said, to push them a little bit and say, guys, let's pull up ourselves. We can't be relaxed. We can't work as if there is, we've got another 100 years to do this. We want to deliver this school. I think that is a line of questioning by the members, because we requested this meeting so that we can have progress, but not just to have progress, but to say, if the program is low, what is it that can be done, you know, in order to ensure that people know that they are supposed to finish this work within a specific time, but not opening up for too much, especially if it's 8 weeks for a professional to take and advertise, another 8 weeks to appoint. So the year is almost what we call a finish now. Two months. A year. I'm sorry to have to be long, but I think that
take this one seriously.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. Chairperson, I'm going to try to respond to the best of my ability, and certainly I'll be supported by both Ms. Diane and Mr. Piliyasi. Let me at the outset thank the honorable members for their contributions, their comments, and the questions, because all of them are legitimate, and I think you summarized it quite well, Chairperson. What I would suggest in the first instance with regard to the next presentation at the next meeting, it's really, I think the 45, 49 schools, let's just get away with Mr. Ramaswamy. He's gone outside. If he could come inside, then he could, I'll respond to that. But I think what you are saying is really that you've got to have a good sense of where we are in relation to the various projects in terms of the presentation. So it shouldn't be a complicated exercise where different questions and difficult questions are going to be asked. And I certainly would request that what we should do is basically separate those schools that are under design stage, and you would then clarify this is the first phase, second phase, third phase, and those that are under construction. So you would know, as we present, these are the number of schools that are under construction. This is where they are. And at this particular level, and if there are any difficulties, to highlight the difficulties in relation to any one of them. And then you look at the element of design. I think the targets suggested by Bella are indeed good, because what is your target and where are you in relation to the target? I mean, that's the kind of outcomes that we seek to achieve. How do we fulfill and achieve those outcomes that we've and targets that we've set for ourselves? So it's a fair comment, and I really want to accept that comment. I think let's just want to clarify one thing. It's important that we clarify that as we speak right now, besides the 49 schools, there are about 70 to 71 schools that are under construction, many of which are almost complete. So that's in addition to the 49. So a lot is happening everywhere else. And I don't know if it's captured adequately in the presentation, but maybe we should do a better job about it. The other 50 schools that we are talking about are 50 additional schools that are basically added onto that. Now, in fact, what we're saying, and maybe we should look at the slide very, very carefully. What we're talking about is 522 schools. That are schools that are supposed to be under construction, the inappropriate schools, 522. From those 522, we basically say that 193 schools are not allocated. And the reasons for them not being allocated is provinces have indicated to us that in some of these schools they are examining possibilities of mergers or realignment. Now, obviously the department can't impose and determine on its own what to do. You take the Western Cape, it had its fair share of challenges in relation to that particular aspect. Matter was taken to court, processes were questioned, and irrespective, we didn't take any side over there, but we're saying that the litigation processes prevented them from doing what they thought was appropriate. Now, you can't overtake that process. You've got to wait for that process to be finalized. And obviously, because of what the court had said, the consultative process are very, very critical. Now, the Western Cape, I can promise you, will not make an announcement about a merger now. An election is coming. This is that. Nor will the Eastern Cape or anybody else, because they're going to say the moment we're going to raise these issues here, they're going to become contentious, and would it be the best political choice to make right now? So I think everybody's going to lie quiet until the election's going to take place. Now, do you make the determination arbitrarily as a national department, or do you wait for the provinces to say to you, these are... What we've done as a national department is to assist the provinces in terms of a framework for mergers, to say these are the processes that have been followed, that have to be followed. This is what you've got to do, and once you've done that, then you can proceed with it, because we don't want an incomplete process where you close one school, you don't look at the issues of transport, you don't look at the issues of accommodation, you don't look at the issues of human resources, in other words, adequate teachers in a school. So you put up another school, you close the one school, the other school doesn't have an adequate number of teachers. So all those factors have to be taken into account, and they are indeed complicated. But the 193 schools does not mean that we're throwing them away. It means that the allocation information. The resources are there. The schools have been identified. We are just waiting for the finalization of this particular process. Now, as they get finalized, in other words, as the decisions are taken, obviously we're going to provide we're going to proceed with the building. The second point, and it's an important point, is really to understand the challenges of building in the Eastern Cape. I mean, just to go to a school, just to travel on that particular road is a challenge on its own. I'm not even talking, go with an ordinary car, you probably would find something wrong with your car by the time you reach the school. Go with a 4x4, you're still at risk on a rainy day. Look at the terrain itself. So there's the geological aspect that you look at it. You're not looking at flat ground. If you have a piece of land that is flat, where you don't have to do any excavation, where you don't have to do any landfilling, where you don't have to do any support over there, you'd be able to put up the school in 6 months without any difficulty. But then put that same school up in the Eastern Cape. It will take you at the same price. It will take you twice as long. And therefore, it means that the Eastern Cape in itself provides a peculiar challenge, an unusual challenge, and parts of KwaZulu-Natal provide a similar challenge. Free State would be much easier, Gauteng would be much easier, the Northwest, most parts of it would be much easier. But Eastern Cape, Limpopo, parts of Limpopo, if I could put it that way, and KwaZulu-Natal, create this particular challenge, and that is why it's better to be more conservative and say, 12 to 14 months. The second thing is, these schools are not two-room schools. They're usually about 10 classrooms, they have an administration block, they have two great art classes, they have playing fields, they have sanitation, they have a whole lot of things. Then they've got the soccer facilities or the netball facilities. Then they have a fence, a perimeter fence. All those things make up a complete school. Now, we could rush and just basically put up the infrastructure without worrying about every classroom being lit. I think when you look at electricity, you don't want the electricity in one place, you want every classroom to be lit. That means that your planning and your design must look at all those things. Just water itself, and the honorable member is correct, there are situations where you basically rely on the municipality. Does the municipality supply water to that particular school? If the municipality does not supply water to the school, what arrangement, what protocol are you going to enter into with the municipality? And indeed, if such a protocol is concluded, what are you going to put to as reservoirs? You put one JoJo tank, you put two JoJo tanks, you put four. Because you've got to make sure, understanding the distance between the town and this particular location, it would be more advisable to put four JoJo than putting one. Because four JoJos will last so much longer. So all these elements of design are very, very critical. I really feel, Chairperson, that we tend to underestimate the complexity of design. If you're going to be spending 15 million or 18 million on a project, you've got to make sure that your design is correct, that it's appropriate to the site, that the engineering drawings are very correct. Because that design would basically form the basis of a contract. Now, if you are haphazard about your design and the content of your design, you're going to pick up problems in terms of your contractual relationships. Litigation basically is inevitable in many instances, whether in the private sector or in the public sector. And as I've indicated, the Western Cape has had problems, so has the Free State had problems, and so has the Eastern Cape. It doesn't permeate all elements, but you always have these particular problems. But what happens in a contract is that there's always an amount retained. In other words, you have a certificate that is being issued in terms of the work in progress. And an amount is retained if there is a default. And in terms of the standard contract that is issued, if there is a default, indeed, you can basically notify the other party to correct the default immediately, and if he or she doesn't do so, then you basically entitled to terminate and appoint another contractor and hold the person responsible for any difference. The person would also be responsible for all costs incurred as a result of litigation that may ensue. Now, that's in ideal legalistic language. You know the realities are somewhat different, and at times you find it much easier. But what we've learned through the Eastern Cape and other projects is that you've got to monitor your retention very, very carefully. In other words, you must make sure that your certificates that you issue do not exceed
and are certainly well below the value of the work that is done. Because if there is a risk of default, then you are not at a loss and you don't lose financially. So the contract is out of sight, you appoint somebody else, but it's not going to cost you more to complete the work in hand. I really would want to argue that 12 to 14 months is not a uniform standard. But in the context of particularly of difficult environment, it would be an appropriate standard to use. But what changed is correct. But I think the department must be forthcoming and saying these projects cannot be finalized within a financial year. It would definitely run into the second year. What we've engaged with Treasury is to say to them that, look, if we can't complete, basically don't penalize us so that we don't have the resources. And they've given us the assurance that as the schools, because they've got to replace mud schools, and they've got to replace unsafe schools, as we proceed, the resources will be made available, but they're not going to give us the money to keep when we are not building. So that arrangement is there. But I think we must understand also that this forms part of the PICC, the Presidential Infrastructure Coordinating Council, as oversight of this matter. And this forms part of SIP 13. That means that the presidency itself has assumed the responsibility for the oversight of these nationally driven projects, whether it's in terms of water sanitation or unsafe and mud schools. And therefore you have the hand of the presidency in terms of what is being done. And Treasury plays a very, very critical role in this regard. From where we are right now, Chair, I want to be very honest and say to you, we are behind. To suggest that we are on our projected time would be a lie. We are behind. But what I can say from where we were last year to where we are now, we are way ahead in terms of planning, in terms of work that is under construction, in terms of oversight, in terms of management. I think we've done a lot. Now, at times you give it to an agency to do on your behalf, the Development Bank of South Africa, the DBSA. Now, you can speak to the Deputy Minister of Finance or the Minister of Finance. They will tell you that they had to make interventions in the DBSA to strengthen their capacity. Now, the department, in good faith, takes an agency that is credible and is assumed it has the capacity, only to discover afterwards that it does not have the capacity. But fortunately, we work in an integrated way. So the department, Deputy Minister of Finance, is set with us in this difficult other journey in Eastern Cape. And certainly, DBSA has a much, much better handle on matters than it had a year ago, as a result of these interventions that we've made. So we will continue intervening. We will continue collaborating and certainly working closely with all the stakeholders. I am reasonably satisfied that this year would be much better. Would be much better than last. We are on target in terms of my personal commitment to the committee. I have delivered, as it were. But I think I've delivered more than that, because what you are having is, as we speak right now, just imagine 40 schools under construction in the Western Cape. It wasn't even part of our conversation, but it's happening. There's another 51 schools under construction, besides the 49 schools that are complete, which are under construction. So things are happening that are tangible, that are real. And we've just got to keep a handle on it. We've got to oversee that particular process. Mr. Ramaphosa, you were gone for a while. The 49 schools, that was my introductory remarks, so you came in a little late to miss it. There is beneficial occupation of 48 of the 49 schools. Children are there, they are being taught, they are being occupied. So it's not a problem. Just 5 schools are affected. 44 are with the certificate of completion everything. The others, there's practical completion, there's beneficial occupation, except for one. And I've got the photograph here of the one. It's nothing to do with the infrastructure. It's nothing to do with the roofs or the classroom. It's got to do with the retaining walls on the outside. External work that has to be done. But we don't want children to be in that vicinity because it poses a small risk. Once that is completed, the children will be there. But another school, which comes from 71, has been delivered, and children are occupying. So technically, you know, the 49 schools have been delivered, as it were. But, I mean, certainly we're going to keep a handle on it. By the end of the financial year, all 49 schools will be duly delivered in its formal sense over there. But take heart from the fact that there's another 71 that's under construction. And I wouldn't worry too much. I wouldn't worry too much about these different phases. It's important that we identify the phases. Because your construction don't occur in batches of 400 schools. As we get the designs completed, we engage we engage your agencies to basically do the work, and contractors are procured for that particular purpose. So it's an ongoing process. And you will notice that we are doing a lot more things simultaneously, concurrently, rather than sequentially, in order to achieve optimum output in terms of infrastructure. But I do believe, quite honestly, that the landscape of our infrastructure in terms of schools is going to change quite dramatically as a result of the difficult lessons that we've learned in the past. So I'm not at all suggesting that we've overtaken our target. I'm suggesting that we are behind our target, but I'm saying that certainly we are doing much better now than we've done in the past. Thank you very much, Chairperson.
No, I was not going to say anything, Chair. Now you pointed me, let me just say this. Honourable Deputy Minister, I understand that. I think I appreciate the explanation, and it's good explanation, and so you would agree with me that therefore the slide has somehow generalized, even when the conditions are not necessarily quite 14 months. So that's only the point I made.
So
we have to change
that.
Yes, I think we have to change it so that we have a different language. Oh, by the way, Chair, this is the question I was asking, and I'm sorry that because I know it's an injury time. I think we must complement the work around the sanitation and electricity. And when we did our oversight work in the Eastern Cape in particular, the situation wasn't very good, to say the least. It was terrible. I remember this school, this high school in Manzana, where they had everything there, but the only thing that you needed across the street, there's water, and across the street, there's electricity. But across the street, not less than 50 meters, there's no water, there's no sanitation, there's literally nothing. And the mayor was there talking about staff. I'm always reminded by that mayor. He was fairly abrupt. But I just want to find out, given the situation in terms of sanitation, water, electricity issues, that I have complimented the work that has been done, do you find that, I've listened to your Georgia Tech, so do you find that there are areas where you have to put a solar panel as an alternative means of resource in terms of using a normal electricity in various areas in the country? And what do you find the reliability of that? Because when we also did that oversight, there were also the solar panel that was not working in working condition. It was put there, but there was nothing really that you can take home or ride home on. So what do you find in terms of your experience in terms of that? I'm talking now about integrated approach in terms of the services that you need. Because you see, now and then there is a service protest about water here. You find that in terms of the school issues, that there is some kind of a problem, general uniform problem in terms of that. And if there is, what is the alternative? Because you may say you've got a tap at the school, but you actually don't have water coming out of it. But in your tick box, you would tick the box as the water in the school exists. Only requires when you go and do the oversight, practical oversight, when you open the tap, there is a problem. Then the municipality will tell you that there is no more water in the reservoir. It only gets filled at this particular time of the day when the reservoir is empty, so there's no water.
Thank you very, very much for that. Who's this for the chairman?
Chair, yes. I just wanted to say to the DM
I understand exactly where you come from with regard to the mergers and rationalizations and the politics and the whole story about it, and the court cases and everything, but what concerns me about it, and that's why I asked the question, is that the money in terms of the budget is committed. When money is committed, it means somebody's paying for it, and that's the taxpayer. And, you know, and that worries me always, because could we not have reduced your tax and my tax in the meantime, so that we can not have to pay the tax, or can we use it for somebody in some other area where we can give better services to the community? That was the reason for my question.
Chairperson, just to understand the Minister, when he spoke about the design, you called it the critical design, referring to water, electricity, sanitation, roads. But I don't understand why you call it critical design, because, you know, that is the normal design to any development, any premises, especially the water, electricity, roads. But you put very much emphasis on that, and you refer to different provinces. So I can understand different province levels, you know, levels of the premises. But the water, electricity, and the others, logistics, those are actually basic instruments that should be there with any development, wherever, whatever development. Thank you.
Chairman, I just want to say, if the schools are not accessible now, can in the next design there be accessibility? We are talking about universal accessibility. But even in this era, our schools are still not yet accessible for people with disabilities. So whoever is designing, can we make sure that it happens? Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. Let me start with the last question first. And I just want to assure the Honourable Member that accessibility is absolutely essential in terms of all our designs. So they have to comply their uniform norms that basically determine access. And from all the new schools that I've visited, each one of them is accessible. It doesn't matter where it's located. So I'm heartened by that. So thank you very much for that. I'm going to go from the bottom up, with your permission. The second, I said the critical elements of water, electricity, and sanitation, especially in a rural area, cannot be overlooked. Because this is where the challenge is far greater. So if you're in a metropolitan area, water and electricity supply is quite easy. But go to the Eastern Cape and see what a challenge water is. You've got to rely on the goodwill of the municipality to supply the water. You've got to make sure that you provide adequately for sufficient supply. It's about rain harvesting. It's about having the appropriate number of sensors to ensure that there is water flowing. So because it's linked to your sanitation as well. And therefore, your approach with regard to water and sanitation in a rural area differs very, very significantly from your approach in a developed urban area. And that is why I use the word critical. Critical in the context of the terrain, in the context of a deep rural area, where what would normally require as an ordinary service, which is available by a municipality, becomes extremely difficult. And the people in the Eastern Cape and KwaZulu-Natal would tell you in these deep rural areas how difficult it is to access these very, very essential services that we take for granted. And the critical was in that particular context, because I cannot think of spending 60 million on infrastructure and not paying particular attention to sanitation, water, and electricity. Now, an interesting story about electricity. In the Eastern Cape, they all get the supply from grid. So we've got our schools have electricity, and we've got a good relationship with ESCO. But you go to some rural areas in the Free State and Gauteng, believe you me, deep rural areas where you basically have to utilize the solar panels. And it's not the best option, because what happens is that the solar panels are being stolen. So that's an additional risk over there. So we would like to get electricity or electrification of the grid. But where it's not available, we have to look at alternative electrical supply. And we do so, whether it's in terms of water. You know, we've just had a meeting with Section 27, a very constructive meeting, I must say, in relation to the challenges of sanitation in Limpopo. And we were very frank and honest about it with regard to furniture and sanitation. They were very heartened. In fact, they commended us for the good progress that is being made. This view, as
but in Limpopo in terms of sanitation. Although the challenges persist, there are still challenges, huge challenges. What they said to us is basically, it's not only about providing EnviroLose in areas where you've got to provide it. It is about basically educating the learners, educating the community in terms of how do you use it and how do you maintain it. Because if you have an EnviroLook structure and you don't know how to maintain it, that EnviroLook is not going to last for a very long time, because you're going to deposit anything out there, you're going to create obstructions over there, and that creates a problem. What we've done as a department now is combined the establishment of those EnviroLook with advocacy and education. And we invited Section 27 to say, please, get your foot soldiers to teach the community and the educators and the learners about the use of that. Because that, to us, is a very, very direct contribution in terms of uplifting communities in the use of this particularly precious and scarce resource. But I think we're learning through our engagements as well. You know, you must thank Mr. Padiachi, but he's provided like 49,000 units of furniture in the Eastern Cape and about 49,000 units of furniture desk from the National Department to Limpopo because of the crisis that we have in relation to death. And you will find basically there's going to be litigation and probably you're going to find a court deciding that, look, you know, you've got to deliver. So we try to deliver as many things as we can at the same time, and then we really appeal to our colleagues to say, just understand that it's a very, very complex situation that we're dealing with. With regard to the last point, you know, that's the reason why we have the appropriations bill at the end of the year, so that we can use resources elsewhere that have been underutilized. So come toward the end of the year, the Minister of Finance would say, in your infrastructure budget, either health or education, you've not utilized this money. We're taking these resources and we're diverting it to another particular in terms of the division of revenue and the appropriation bill. So that money is not lost. It basically would go to other priority areas. But we would rather plan meaningfully and purposefully than basically saying, well, the money has been allocated for a school, put up a school there, merely to discover that it's going to be a white elephant in 3 months of time. Because it's not only the school, it's about the educators, it's about the number of learners. Is it going to serve its purpose? And where provinces in particular say that they have a particular challenge in terms of numbers in those schools, they would like to merge, and we've got to give them time. We say, rather than building, let them finalize it so that we will build, but we will build according to the needs. It might mean that school A, that would have had 5 classes, would now have 10 classes. But school B would be closed, and we have a bigger school in school A. I think this is rational, that's logical, and it serves the needs of the people. So please look at it from that perspective there, and that the decisions are not arbitrary, but rather in consultation with the provinces and addressing the needs of the learners. Thank you very much, Chair. And Chair, by the way, all our structures can be seen at the website. So honourable members must be asked. Let's see, if you want to look at our infrastructure program and you want to see the photographs, go to our website, am I right? And they're there. And on social networking, whenever we open a school, we inform the people. So we are really trying to. So our social networking service is excellent. It's only the media that doesn't want, the journalists don't want to come there. They sit in their offices and they phone the principal to say, when did your school open? Are you happy with it? Are your toilets working? Oh, yes. That's, you know, and they tick in the box without going to this particular venue. And really, that's really, as far as I'm concerned, very lazy journalism. I think they should basically travel a little bit and see the beautiful country.
Yeah, thank you very much. Maybe I don't know if that general is the concluding remarks you would like to make. We didn't hear the Tibichu's voice. Okay. Well, thank you very much, GM. It's a pity that your last mic.
I think that we, honorable members, I think that the engagement was really a good engagement, and I think the point that the maybe we can take from this meeting, the issue of monitoring and planning, and that ensure that there's proper planning and communication of what is to be done by when, so that we don't have a general statement that we'll build 100 schools. If at the end of 6 months, yeah, the other schools are not there, then we'll say that the department has failed. We promised to build 100 schools, and the other schools are not there, but there are 40, 50 schools, whatever number. But I think that this process, at the end, as we indicated earlier, should also, I mean, part of what we're learning from him is how to communicate such that there's an understanding of what you're trying to say. But the issue really of trying to accelerate the process is an important one, because the report itself does concede that you are a little bit behind time. Maybe the question that we're trying to raise the department that needs to ask itself is, what is it that we do to just put a little bit of we move from one to two, year two, and also that we can see the delivery of the schools. The honorable members have also spoken about the water, sanitation, and electricity. You know, with respect to electricity, in some areas, in some provinces, I don't want to mention the name of the province, but you get phone calls that the councillor of the ward. The wards there, unlike your urban wards, are a little bit geographically small. There might be more, the population might be higher, but there is spread out. Then you get a phone call that says the councillor has directed the electricity line to move towards his or her house, and the school falls outside. I'll give you a letter that I've received at GM. The school falls outside, and a lot of economic activity in terms of the area is around the school or what. But the electricity is directed outside. What do we do to ensure that we can have electricity at the schools? You build your computer rooms, your everything that you have, but the school can't operate because there's no electricity. Electricity is just moving that side. I don't know the relationship between obviously the department of education and the ESCOM, that's also to be sensitized, to take this issue into account. Otherwise, SDM, thank you very much, and good luck for the few time that we're having. But that's the other thing at the end, but maybe it's not suitable for this meeting, but this committee, next week the Minister of Finance will be tabling the budget, and this committee is supposed to deal with the Division of Revenue in that budget. But I'm sure who will advise you of the way forward. I suspect that we have covered some ground in terms of that. But thank you very much. Honourable members, tomorrow we are meeting the department, the third quarter report. And we are adopting minutes. We have to adopt minutes, but I don't think we're not very far behind. So we have what you call it. It's hangover, but so, but I think that we're not so much behind. That's something that I wanted to say, but it's fine. Let's meet tomorrow morning at 9:30. I don't know if I have not seen the presentation from DPMP. That's received now. Okay. Thank you very much. I don't know if there's anything else. We had received the invitation from Cameroon. I think we did mention it for evaluation, but apparently we have exhausted our budget. But also, there was also a challenge with timing because for the first week of March. That is when we will be dealing with the similar revenue. But with two people, if we have sufficient budget, we could work it for, I'm sure. Okay. Thank you very much. The meeting is adjourned.
Thank you.